Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. Welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys, and today I am joined by Gemma, CEO of Portsmouth Creates. Welcome, Gemma.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
It's good, isn't it?
It's great.
I can't believe that we haven't done a podcast yet. We've been going for a year and a bit, and you should have been right at the top end.
It's all right.
What's going on?
I'm treating this as a catch up with you, so because it's like passing ships in the night a lot of the time. So happy to come in and have a chat.
Yeah, the busy life of a non-profit CEO. We just never get to see each other, do we?
We don't. No.
And I suppose you could consider us sister organisations in that. Yeah. You're the creative sector, we're the private sector, and then we've got the Hive with the third sector as well, which kind of make up the City Alliance.
So
it's good to actually have a proper natter with you at last.
Love a natter.
Yes. So a long policing career left me with great skills of deduction, and using those to their best, I can guess that you don't come from Portsmouth originally.
No. I don't know what gives it away.
So where are you from originally?
So I'm originally from the Wirral, which is over the water from Liverpool. So if you're on the Birkenhead side, whoop whoop, that's me, you take the ferry across the Mersey. Yes, it does play Jerry and the Pacemakers as you arrive into the terminal at the pier.
Really?
Yeah.
So I've been to Liverpool, but I've never done the ferry. So.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah. It's an institution.
Yeah.
I'm from Birkenhead on the Wirral. Born and bred there. And started my career as an apprentice, actually, many years ago, far too many years ago now, in the travel industry initially.
Right.
And I worked my way through, you know, leisure travel into then business travel to then into events, corporate events. So that kind of led me into my cultural world, I suppose. Yeah.
So how did you end up in Portsmouth?
So I started my cultural career for Culture Liverpool.
Right.
So I was part of the team who delivered Liverpool 2018 as part of the Capital of Culture. I worked on all the legacy events in the city. So all the major events programme. Was really lucky to be part of some transformational events like music festivals, river festivals, a huge production with the 1418 Now project, which was around World War One and World War Two in particular. Wow. Fantastic to be part of. But I also looked after sport as well at the time. So culture was kind of like the beating heart, but then I also crossed over into sport and I looked after the Clip Around the World Yacht Race. So I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. I quite like all this, you know. And my ambition was always to work for Liverpool Football Club. Sorry, Pompey fans.
I still have trauma around the 1992 FA Cup semi-final penalty shootout against Liverpool.
I have trauma every Sunday at the moment watching it.
True, yeah.
So that was the goal. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple of interviews, and I was always getting down to the last two or three, and the response was, you've got no global experience. So my thought process was, right, that's it. I'm going to go and work for Clip Around the World Yacht Race, and I did, and I loved it. It was great. It was fantastic. So I packed my bags and I moved down to the South Coast, and, you know, although Clipper Race are based in Gosport, I lived in Southsea and been here for almost 10 years now.
Wow. So the things you learn. I didn't know Clipper Race were based in Gosport.
Yeah.
I knew they started and finished and then started again at Gunwolf Keys. So 2 years on the trot. Have you done it?
No.
Out, done a leg?
No way.
No.
No way, Jose. No. It's not for me.
Right.
I do sail, but not like that. Hats off to every single one of them for doing it. It's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It does look interesting, but I don't know. I don't know what it
would
be like.
You'd be good, actually.
I don't know.
You would? Yeah, I think you'd be very good.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing my wife would encourage me to do just to get me out of the house for a few months. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so you've ended up down here and then...
Yeah, and then I was really fortunate that I was part of the senior leadership team for Southampton's bid to become UK City of Culture in 2025. So my role was the commercial and marketing director. So I ran the campaign and all of the fundraising for the bid, and was almost a second to the bid director. It was an amazing experience to be part of, having had a bit of exposure to that in Liverpool and the, you know, the legacy impact that something like that brings to a city. It was fascinating. And although I lived in South Sea, you know, do not miss the commute to Southampton every day. It was really interesting to kind of unlock the potential around what the city could deliver through, which was really a tricky time because we did it all through lockdown.
Yep.
So literally as the bid process started, we went straight into lockdown. So everything was remote, all of the consultation with the community, all of the negotiations with partners, everything was remote. So that made it quite challenging. But I think, you know, the city and the region should be really proud of where we got to in that competition. Yeah, yeah. I did think, stood in Solent University the night of the announcement when I'm telling people, if we don't win, please do not swear. We're live on BBC One Show. Have a little inside swear, not an outside swear. We thought we'd done it. We really thought we'd done it. So the sheer disappointment when Bradford's name was called was really hard to take because the whole team, it became a lifestyle. It didn't become a job. Yeah. It was like, we've got to do this. You've got to give it your all. So I feel really proud to have been part of that team. Mm. And it certainly taught me a heck of a lot. And without that, I wouldn't be sat here today as chief exec at Portsmouth Creates.
Yeah. So obviously a sort of clear synergy between the two roles. So almost a natural fit from one to the other. But there must be some bigger challenges with Portsmouth Creates and trying to drive that whole cultural piece across the city, whereas the bid, you know, there's a clear aim, mission. It's a single project almost.
Yeah.
Whereas you're now, I can't even begin to imagine how many plates you must have spinning and probably no people to spin them.
Limited yes. plate spinners.
Yes. So how have you found the shift into that role?
It's been really interesting because initially I joined Portsmouth Creates to help with a bit of fundraising. I didn't think, looking back, I'd still be here, being really honest.
Yeah.
I thought I was coming in to help and then I'd be gone. But there's something really fascinating and special about when you're doing something that you love in your backyard, because you get under the skin of it, and once you're under the skin of it, there's no stopping you. You know, I feel truly connected to what we do and really passionate about making a difference, because I look at the city and I can see so much potential. We just haven't been given that opportunity, certainly from a cultural and creative industries perspective. So the growth opportunity is massive. And I suppose the challenges have been almost setting out our stall of what we do and why we do it. And I suppose we've really had to go back to basics of this is who we are and this is what we do. And we did have to rewrite the strategy and the focus because, you know, a lot had changed since the brilliant work that had been done through Portsmouth Creates through lockdown, fantastic work with communities, fantastic work with the sector. But we come to a point where we were almost, okay, we need to reposition ourselves and almost go back out to the sector and ask them what they needed. And it was really clear what everyone kept coming back and saying to us was, we need support. We need growth. We need support. You know, some of the conversations that we've had with people across the city are unfortunately those of, I don't know how I'm going to keep the lights on in my house because I can't see where the income's going to come from. Yeah. And, you know, that in itself, if that's not a driver, I don't know what is.
So I guess from talking about some of those challenges within the sector, it will probably be giving anyone that's listening that's not heard of Portsmouth Creates a little bit of an inkling as to what Portsmouth Creates is. But how would you kind of describe what Portsmouth Creates is and does for those that haven't heard of you?
I love this question because I think back to when we were doing this strategy work, and I know it's boring to talk about strategy, but when we were doing it, we were like, oh, well, who are you? Who are we and what do we do? And now it's really easy for us to kind of be, you know, we're a community interest company that supports the growth of the creative sector locally in Portsmouth. So we offer lots of different services, from the business support program, which Shape in Portsmouth help with, as do other partners across the city, like the university and the council in particular. But without us being that gateway for creatives in the city, they often get left behind because they're not seen as a business. But ultimately, if you are generating an income, you are a business. Yeah. And, you know, we're here to do that critical friend piece, that arm around them piece, to make sure that we can see their ambition through, really. So that's just one of the things that we deliver. We deliver a whole host of different program strands, which I'm sure we'll talk about throughout this. But our main objective as a business is to support the sector growth.
Yeah. And I suppose it's a bit like we're trying to do across the whole business piece. That is, just as you were talking there, I just like writing a little note because it made me think of that Portsmouth, the business support piece. And you find it with any business in that quite often you have someone who's developing what probably started off as a hobby or something they liked to do into something that they want to monetize and make a living out of. And I reckon you probably see that even more than we do in the creative sector.
Definitely.
And that, I suppose, comes with some particular challenges, particularly people that struggle to actually move past the idea of it being a hobby and becoming a business. And I certainly find, you know, the conversation with those, and they tend to be sole traders, generally starts with the question, are you paying yourself? Oh, no, I'm not.
Dave, I cannot tell you how many conversations I have with artists locally that do not pay themselves.
Yeah.
And we are huge advocates for, if you're not getting paid, don't do it. Ultimately, because I use the analogy of, if your car broke down, would you pay the mechanic? Yeah. Well, why aren't you getting paid? You're still providing a service. You need to be paid. And we've done a really interesting piece of work actually with local artists. I won't name who they are, but local artists that, you know, we're in that space of, we don't know where we're going, we don't know what we're doing, you know, we're not getting paid. And to be honest, the first couple of conversations were heartbreaking because I was walking away thinking, oh my God, we need to help these people. We need to get them sorted. They need a plan. They need a vision, you know, all of this. Now, they are absolutely flying. And I couldn't feel prouder that, you know, the support sessions that we did have, you know, ignited something for them. They've really found their USP. They've really honed into that. And they're doing such great work. So, you know, that's when we think about case studies, that's job done, I suppose.
And I think there's probably a double-edged sword here, because there's the other side to this, which is probably more prevalent in your sector than anywhere else as well. And I get this a little bit with the old wedding photography when I do a bit of photography. Is you get people that come up to you and say, yeah, can you do my wedding for free? And it will be really good exposure for you. Yeah, I don't actually need exposure. I need to pay a gas bill.
Exactly.
It doesn't work like that.
The whole piece around, it's great exposure.
Yeah.
Yes, it might be, but actually... Yeah. Who's going to pay the petrol to get you there?
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, I'm totally with you on that one.
Yeah. So of course, it will probably be really easy to think that you're just about artists, but the creative sector is much bigger than that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so much bigger. So obviously we do a lot of work locally around the growth of the sector. And, you know, if we look at the government's new industrial strategy, say newish, creative industries is one of the nine industries featured in that, which is great. So the real focus on film, the development of film and TV in particular, you know, the focus on the music sector. When we talk about the breadth of the creative industries, we're talking about create tech and what that means. And, you know, the GVA that is coming out of the creative industries is hugely significant. You know, we hosted an event recently with the Department of Culture, Media and Sport at the Wedgwood Rooms recently, in partnership with the Music Venues Trust, which is really focusing on the development of grassroots music venues, because without them, the sector cannot even begin to develop. So we are working right across the spectrum. So we've been part of the development around film locally as well. So there's a lot that we probably do behind the scenes from an advocacy and a growth piece, which is more than just the local. It's the regional and the national piece as well, which we're involved with.
I suppose, it's easy to focus on things like, I don't know, international exports and advanced manufacturing and some of those things that are traditionally associated with really driving GVA and GDP, but actually creative sectors as probably a low cost starting point, probably have quite a big impact. And of course, if you can bring the film side of it, people in to make films in your area, because you know, you've got that strong setup, then it all adds to the local economy. So
absolutely. I mean, film's a great example, because when we think about the supply chain that goes with that, it's the taxi drivers, it's the hotels, it's the caterers, you know, the beautician. It's the full, you know, cohort of the economy that's going to benefit just from a film, but from a film. And I suppose when we look at the region, the Solent region, in terms of what it can offer from a film perspective, it's so diverse. You know, you've got heritage sites, you've got access to the water, there's brilliant green spaces. So we should be on the map in terms of that. And there's brilliant work that's been happening over the last, I would say, the last 4 or 5 years to really make sure that we're a part of that and we're in the mix.
So in terms of some of the projects that you have going on around the city then, what does that look like?
Oh, it's been a busy year, Dave. It's been a busy year. Got more grey hairs. So this year we've had a massive focus on a project called In Our Words, which is all about driving literacy levels locally. So as part of our commitment to the Arts Council and the city, we have had a small pot of funding, which we have stretched to go quite far across the city. So we work to have a call out across the community to say, here is some seed funding to either utilise as a match fund for a bigger pot of money or a small project fund. Here is the criteria that we want you to hit, which is all about increasing literacy levels and engagement locally. By the end of that programme, we'll have delivered just shy of 150 events across the community, right across the city, right from the north of the city all the way through. In terms of age and demographic, we go from early years to, at the moment, there's a really beautiful project being delivered in care homes. So again, the breadth of activity, and it's not all about just picking up a book and reading. Some of this is being translated through textile art and music, and there's a beautiful project around rapping, not Christmas rapping, which was done in multiple languages that are represented in the city. So the breadth of the creativity that's come through, it's fantastic. And all of this has been done on a really small budget about £80,000.
My visual brain can't move past you mentioning care homes.
It's beautiful.
And so I've now got wrapping in care homes stuck in my head.
That's another project.
But and so that will feed into
that finishes
world record attempt.
So that finishes on World Book Day next year. So we launched the programme this year at World Book Day with just shy of 400 children from local schools, all in their World Book Day costumes with a local, with an author who did a brilliant education piece in partnership with Portsmouth Football Club and Pompey in the community. Huge thanks to them. Without their support, there's no way we could do this. Yes, I probably will be barred from the club at some point of trying to make this happen. But we will close the year out on World Book Day next year, which is also part of the National Year of Reading, which is so exciting. With a Guinness World Record attempt at Fratton Park, with as many children and young people as possible, hopefully for the largest reading lesson if we can make it. So my core team and I are going hell for leather to get as many children from the schools into that stadium as possible.
Yeah, that's a big challenge.
No pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. Which sounds quite easy on the face
of
it.
Really not.
Yeah, let's just stick 20,000 young people into a football stadium.
Yeah.
But actually the logistics of that is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're saying if you can walk to Fratton Park, please walk.
Yeah.
And then if anybody listening has a bus, I will take it.
Yeah.
Please.
Or even several buses.
Yeah, please. Because that's one of one of the biggest barriers is that, you know, we want schools to be involved because this is such an important subject. You know, without being able to read, your life changes drastically. Yeah. Dramatically? I don't think that's a word.
Dramatically.
It's a new word.
You've merged
a new word.
Dramatically and drastically into to one word.
It's what we do as creatives. You know, without that skill, your life could change massively. Mm. And it's so important what it then leads to. It leads to employability. It leads to, you know, better life chances. And we want every young person in this city to have access to that. It's one of the biggest barriers is engagement from the schools because we don't want any barriers around cost for transport and things like that. So we are working hard to mitigate those.
Yeah, excellent. I'm looking forward to it. It should be good.
Me too. What are you going to come dressed as?
Oh, I haven't given any thought. I've just given my dinosaur costume to Spark.
I know.
So
you'll have to get it back.
Yeah, now.
Cat in a hat.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, that's just one of many, isn't it?
There's
of other projects.
Lots going on. We're also starting to think about plans for We Shine 2026.
Yeah. Particularly big centenary We Shine, perhaps.
We're looking at a theme of celebrate. We want to use the theme to the community to celebrate all things Portsmouth and who they are. There's a big fundraising push that needs to happen for that because it's for us to do it. There's quite a significant amount of funding that we need to find to make that a success and to keep it free. I think that's one of the biggest things for me is making sure that cultural provision is free where possible. And sometimes not using the word culture is helpful because if it's on people's doorsteps and it's not badged as culture, they're going to participate. If you call it culture, they're like, oh, it's not for me.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, we want to make things as accessible as possible for people across the city. So we've got We Shine. We're just fully into our We Thrive mentoring program, which this year has been in partnership with Portsmouth Pride. We've got 10 fantastic artists from the community cabaret stage, all of which are now working with their mentors to develop their practice locally, which is great. Shout out to the brilliant mentors who are giving up their time, which is fantastic. And these are experts from across different fields, which is great. So musicians, we've got technicians, all you name it. We've got the right people on board to really help these individuals to grow because that's what we want to do. Earlier this year, we launched Playland Creative Hub, which is a new facility, new venue in the heart of the city. It's at the top of Commercial Road and it's a hub all around creative industries. So it's a two-story building. We've got upstairs is Create at Playland, where it's a hub for micro and SME creative businesses and artists. All of those are supported through the Business Support Programme. And it links into the space downstairs, which is a cultural venue run by young people, programmed by young people, and they are learning entrepreneurial business skills and roots into the creative industries. The agreement is that any tenant upstairs must give work experience, paid experience, or as their business grows, apprenticeships to those young people downstairs, because it's about breaking down barriers into employability in the creative industries that may not be a college route or a theatre school or whatever it may be. We need to make it accessible.
And it, I mean, upstairs is just amazing. It's a great, I mean, from what it looks like now, from when you first showed me around and sort of stepping over buckets and things.
Oh, there was a lot of buckets.
Yeah, but now it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing space up there.
It's so, I suppose when you walk in, we had somebody this morning who walked in and went, whoa, it's just, there's too much for my eyes. You know, it is a visual feast.
But it's funny because I remember meeting you and Jane for the first time and thinking, well, there's going to be like some amazing creative studio somewhere. And you were like, no, can we come to you? Because we don't actually have anywhere.
Well, we did have an office. We very kindly were accommodated by the brilliant team at Victorious once a week.
Yeah.
Then we got a bit big and we had to like share desks. And, you know, just having our own space has been transformational for the team as well, because the collaboration of actually seeing one another and being able to work closely together, it's just been fantastic. So we're really pleased about that.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I can imagine. And I'm guessing we've alluded to the centenary with the We Shine, but that probably provides a lot more opportunities, not just for you at Creates, but the creative sector as a whole, with some of the cultural things that will be going on in the city next year anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So we're really pleased to be supporting Portsmouth City Council with their programme around 2026. We did a bit of work a little while ago with the City Council, and we're really grateful for it because we saw the transformation. But a small pot, which we used as match funding for artists and creatives to use to then leverage more investment in through organisations like the Arts Council, like Heritage Lottery Fund, et cetera, et cetera. So we managed that, and in year one we leveraged just over 300,000 from a pot of 30K. Then we did it again. We had a slightly bigger pot of 60 and we bought in to the local economy just shy of 800,000, but that created 350 jobs.
Right.
So we track all of this. So for the centenary, again, we'll hold the match funding pot, but we work with every single applicant to make sure that their application is as strong as it can be. It doesn't clash with anything else going in that we may know of, because we know that that process cancels one out. So we're working strategically with the council to make sure that any application that is going in hopefully is successful, but it's leveraging back in more money into the creative economy and more jobs as well, because that's so important right now.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose that brings me nicely on to, I suppose, what does the future look like? For the not just the city, but the creative sector as a whole? And I suppose AI is the kind of the obvious sort of shadow looming, you know, and there's lots of good stuff, but there's also lots of bad stuff. And you kind of hear these stories about, will AI replace artists? Or because now if I want an image, I can just throw some words into an AI engine and it produces something quite incredible straight away. But actually it does rely on someone doing the creative piece at some point, right at the start of it. So how do things like that impact on the sector, and what do you think the future for the creative sector looks like?
I think if I think about where we are now as a sector, I think there's some significant challenges still. Funding will always be a challenge, I think, until we are in a space where many different businesses understand the value that the creative and cultural industries bring. So, you know, creative thinking is in every single business, you know, that comes from the work that we do as a sector. So it's kind of, how is that translated through to the business sector and what have you? And there's some fantastic work happening across different cities of different sectors working together, which, you know, there's something in Plymouth currently, which is really interesting. So you can kind of see the crossover in the sectors happening more and more, which is something that I feel really passionately about and I think is definitely needed. I think when we think about government funding, again, there's some real challenges there in terms of what does the future look like, I suppose. For us locally, I think there are opportunities and threats, especially around the local government reorganisation. I think there is an opportunity for, you know, a greater partnership working across the LGR locality. Yep. But then when we think about devolution, I think that actually is going to be a great opportunity for the creative industries, because when we look at things like creative corridors and, you know, where investment is being channeled, it is generally going to those devolved authorities. And I'm always a bit like, you know, we just need to be in that mix, you know, that Liverpool, Manchester, those kind of places that have really taken it on board and gone forward with it in the right way.
Yeah. And especially with the devolution piece, you hear a lot of talk about, you know, the mayor having devolved powers around transport, business development and stuff, but you don't hear culture mentioned too much. Yeah. But actually, there's a real opportunity there.
Yeah, and we're really pleased to be working with colleagues already across, you know, Southampton, the Isle of Wight and Hampshire around the development of almost a cultural manifesto, which will go to the mayoral candidates to say, this is what the sector needs. And that's not coming from us as development, you know, development leaders, cultural leaders. It's coming from the sector because, again, we need to be able to present to the mayoral candidates that this is the reason why, you know, culture and creative industries, it cuts across so many different things like health, the health impacts that can be developed from cultural are massive. You know, when we look at things like social prescribing and the cost saving to the NHS, and there's just so many areas that I think it gets forgotten about.
Yep.
But that's our job to kind of hammer it home and be around that table, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I think there are opportunities and, you know, threats as well at the moment. I can't sit here and go, you know, it's all rosy, because it's really challenging in terms of the financial landscape.
Yeah, definitely. And for yourselves, sort of looking a lot more insular and just at Portsmouth Creates, what do you think the future looks like? Is it much the same challenges around funding and sort of trying to still drive the same mission in the city?
I think the mission will remain similar. We have to move with the sector.
Yeah.
You know, we are constantly responding to them. So if they said to us, can you paint it blue instead of red, then we're going to do that because that's what they need. I think for us, we're in a challenging spot because our current funding finishes at the end of next year. So we are funded by the Arts Council England and other funders locally until the end of next year. And that work is already underway to think about what 2027 looks like. Yep. There's some shift in sands around timeframes with the next big funding opportunity with the Arts Council, which probably won't kick in until 28. So I think we're looking at two different models, one being 2027.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity? What does that look like? And there are some plans afoot. And then what does it look like further down the line? And again, we need to take into consideration local government reorganisation and our placement within devolution and how we work with our colleagues across the region to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Challenging times.
But opportunities.
Opportunities. And I think some of the points you've made around the sort of value of it, especially around the sort of economic and business perspective around the sort of GVA and growth in the economy that the cultural sector brings, but also some of the other benefits, the sort of health side of it, the well-being side of it. I don't think anything probably brings people together cohesively in the same way as culture does. So I think it has a really strong part to play in community cohesion. Yeah. All of those things are really, really vital, especially at the moment. Feels like they're more needed than ever.
Yeah.
So you'd like to think that someone sensible is there making sure that the funding continues and organisations like yourselves can continue to support that sector.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is a really, really difficult one for those small businesses and... I quite, especially when we look at the business support piece, I quite often think that most people just want someone that's already trodden the path to lean on,
they
someone to ask the questions to, and tell them that they're not doing the wrong thing, or sometimes that they are doing the wrong thing, and help them with it. And it's not that difficult. But if you haven't got the people that can make those connections and provide the support, suddenly those businesses or artists or creatives, they're on their own.
And I like the fact that you've kind of raised that point, Dave, because sometimes what we find through our business support sessions is we're just an ear. You know, there's a lot of practitioners out there that are making from their kitchen table or their garden shed or wherever. And, you know, it can be a lonely space. And I suppose that's why we've created Playland. It's about giving artists a space where actually they can just come in and work together. And we've already seen some lovely collaborations happening that aren't forced. They're actually, you know, natural, which is great. But that piece around, there's a friend here. We can just be a friend.
It is important because, you know, and we get that just as much as anyone else. And I quite like it when we kind of have the sessions where, you know, sort of yourself, Lorna, I together talking about the challenges we face, because it reminds me that, you know, it's not just me that's facing that, or it's not just you. And actually, it's, you know, suddenly you're not on your own. It's good. Well, loads going on.
So we could probably
pull another hour out of this easily without even thinking about
more
it.
Tea.
And there's so much more I'd love to talk to you about. So maybe we'll get you back in again, maybe nearer the record attempt or just after it.
And, that would be great.
Yeah, see how that's gone. But so many other things linked to stuff like that, literacy and standards of education in the city and things that are all relevant that we could talk about. But we've run out of time, and I always like to finish by asking our guest if they could recommend a place to go or something to do in the city. So what would be your Portsmouth recommendation?
Oh, there's so many. But Dominic Jones is probably going to kill me because I didn't say the Mary Rose, but definitely go the Mary Rose. There you go, Dom. I would say, because I don't think, well, a lot of people will say this, but I don't know how many people will sit here on your podcast and say this. I would say get yourself a ticket, get yourself down to the Wedgwood Rooms and see some real good grassroots music.
So I don't think the Wedgwood Rooms has cropped up as a recommendation once at all in this. So I'm going to have to check the list because we keep our...
Do you?
Yeah, it's on the website. You can see what everyone prior to you has recommended. I don't think the Wedgwood Rooms has cropped up, but it's a really great one. I used to live just off of Albert Road, and my younger days, that was my the music venue of choice. And I've seen some really quite big bands in the Wedgwood Rooms.
It's a pompy institution.
It is, definitely.
It really is.
But it's not just the music, it's the comedy. There's so much going on there.
Yeah.
It is a really good little place. I remember reading not that long ago something about Oasis's first tour and the list of about 20 places that they played on their very first tour. The Wedgwood Rooms was one of those. But the point of the article and the horror of it was the Wedgwood Rooms was one of about four or five of those 20 that still exist.
Yeah.
All the rest are gone.
Yep.
And that's the thing, isn't it? If we want to keep culture alive, if we want to give chance to new artists, then we've got to support those small places.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking forward to when Crystal Tides are world megastars, being able to say, I saw them when they were, no one had else had heard of them. And that sort of thing. It's great, isn't it? We've got to support that scene.
We have, definitely. And I think, you know, the grassroots music really, really, really needs our support right now. So buy a ticket. Doesn't matter what it's for. Just go and buy a ticket.
It's a really, that in itself is just a really interesting sector when you think about how things have changed. It's really easy. I mean, if you just look at film, for instance, you know, we all used to go and hire a video from Blockbuster. Then it was DVDs. Then it was cheaper to buy DVDs than it was to hire them. So everyone owned thousands. And then all of a sudden, no one's got a DVD player at all. You just stream everything.
You've got a DVD player.
Have you?
Yeah. And my other half said to me the other week, have we got a DVD player? I was like, there it is. It's there.
Yeah.
We had a conversation.
We've got one.
Just
it's just not plugged into the telly.
Oh,
but
well,
we'll sort it out. But
CDs is another one.
But and this is my point. When you then look at the same journey for the music sector, revenue used to come from sales and CDs. You know, I there was nothing I used to love more as a youngster going into HMV or Virgin, R Price, and flicking through the vinyl and looking at the nice album covers and deciding which one you were going to spend your pocket money on. But we don't do that at all now. I've got my Spotify subscription and that's it. So artists are clearly not getting the revenue that they once did from those sales. So live becomes even more important because that's the primary source of income.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the piece recently about Sam Fender giving his Mercury Music prize money back to the Music Venues Trust to go to some grassroots music. I just thought, good on you, Sam. Yeah. You know, that's brilliant. It's like the ticket levy now, you know, from larger venues. The ticket levy is really important to keep those grassroots music venues going.
Yeah.
But so are we as a community.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Really good shout. So, yeah, we'll add that to the
list. Wedgwood Rooms.
Get yourselves down there. See a great band that you've never heard of. And then follow them on Spotify, Instagram, whatever else. And, really, really good shout. Been great chatting to you, Gemma.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I could literally
sit here all day.
Yeah, we're going to get you back, definitely. We're going to get you back in. I can't believe we left it this long.
Sorry
about that. But yeah, we'll get another one in. But it's been great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.